back at the beginning of the season, when we kicked it off, I alluded to the fact that our life has changed quite a bit. And if you follow me over in my newsletter or on social media, you've probably gotten that sense. Our goals are a little bit different right now. We're working on some different projects. And the typical pattern of life that we have followed for the past, 15 years is just different. Not bad, but different. And so I've been thinking about this a lot as I contemplate how to show up in my own life, how to show up here on the podcast, how to show up on social media, what that looks like, how it's shifted. And so I wanted to dive into that today. This is our last episode for the season before we take a little break. So I figured it was a good time to explore this idea of what it looks like when homesteading takes a back seat. So here we go. Welcome to the Old Fashioned on Purpose podcast. This is the show where we look at what we have left behind as we have raced towards progress as a culture and how we can get the good pieces back. I'm your host, Jill Winger. I have been doing this homesteading thing long before it was cool, long before it was trendy, long before trad wife was a normal term that we all talked about. And I'm really passionate about helping people ask better questions, be inspired to take risks, and kind of adopt some of these old-fashioned skills into their everyday modern lives. So, yes, this is the end of the season. I'm going to take a bit more of an extended break than I normally do, just because I am working on the cookbook pretty heavy right now. My deadline is actually September 1st of this year, but I know how summer goes, and it's insane and ridiculous. And so I want to have the bulk of the recipe testing done by May 31st, which is coming right up. And so I'm taking a little break off the show so I can just hammer down on the recipes. It's going really good so far. I'm really excited about the recipes that are in the lineup as we speak. You know, a lot of times when a cookbook does well, I feel like the follow-up cookbooks are usually a little lackluster, kind of the sequel phenomenon. You know, movie sequels are rarely as good as the first one. And I really don't think that will be the case with this book. I'm following in that same vein of recipes that made the first one such a success, the stuff that you guys like, simple ingredients, whole food, stuff in your pantry, but we're just taking it to the next level. And hopefully some things you haven't seen before. So anyway, working away on that, testing, so much recipe testing. And I'm just going to be a little bit of a hermit for a while while I do that. So we'll be back probably midsummer, somewhere in the summer, but don't be concerned if you don't see an episode for a little while. All right. So topic of today's episode is, what does it look like, or what do we do when homesteading takes a back seat in our life? And there may be some of you listening to this right now who are going, yeah, that's never going to happen. Right? You're fresh. You're excited. You've just jumped on the trend because it is trendy now. I never thought I'd say that. Homesteading is a trend. I have some mixed feelings about that, but that's a topic for another episode on another day. But homesteading is everywhere. It is now a common term. When I used to talk about it, I had to always explain it first. And now I have random people come up to me and just use it in everyday conversation, which is fascinating. I'm also seeing, how do I say this nicely? There's a couple people in my life, like on the periphery of my life that I follow on social media. They're like friends or extended family. I know when they start talking about something, it's mainstream because they are the opposite of early adopters, right? When we look at that trend of when ideas come into culture, I'm generally an early adopter. I know many of you probably are, but I have these people in my life who are the opposite. They are the end of the curve. They are the bottom of the curve. And I know when they start talking about something, it is mainstream. And I have started to see several of these people talk about seed oils and beef tallow and sourdough and raw milk. And I'm like, all righty, we have officially, we are mainstream in this homesteading idea, these homesteading principles. So it's kind of just fascinating to watch that. I've seen it so many times with so many things that I have pioneered or been in the beginning of. And it's just funny to watch that arc come down. So anyway, homesteading is trendy. Homesteading is everywhere. I saw, you know, those homestead bundles that go around. I used to participate in them. I don't anymore, but they're like the bundle of ebooks and courses. And I just for fun clicked on it. And I was looking at all of the people who had contributed to that bundle. And there was probably 30 or 40 people in, you know, homestead influencers, quote unquote. I knew one of them. Back in the day on something like that, I would have been in the bundle and I would have known every single person. And it's kind of like, I feel like the old guard of homestead influencers, we're off doing our own thing now. We have this whole new, fresh crop of folks who are doing YouTube and stuff. So just, it's very interesting. But it's also interesting that as homesteading has finally become, quote, quote, mainstream, trendy, whatever, I have felt like in my own life, homesteading has started to take more of a back seat, more than it ever has. You know, it used to be my main identity. It was my main focus. It was the thing that lit me up more than anything else. It was what I was talking about nonstop. It was what I was sharing about online. And I have felt this shift coming gradually for a couple years. And then this past 6-8 months, it's really picked up speed. And I really kind of hit home, or really, I sat back and thought about it a month or two ago when we lost Oakley, our matriarch milk cow. Some of you might have seen that on social media or if you're on my newsletter. She was old. It was going to happen. I hadn't noticed her ailing. I think she just died in her sleep. But she was, I mean, we've had her since 2011. We got her as a heifer. So she's been around a while. I knew it was inevitable. She lived a good life. I kept my promise to her that I would not send her to town. We would not turn her into hamburger. She would earn her retirement with us. And she did. So it was a peaceful passing for her and I. It was something that felt natural and expected. But I think more than anything, it felt like the end of an era for us, because Oakley was what started it all. I mean, the goat started it all, to be fair, but I don't always like to give goats credit. So I say Oakley started it all, but she was really the icon for our homestead. And when I was posting or preparing a post about her for Instagram, I was going through all my photos of her. I have more freaking glamour shots of that cow than I do anything else on our homestead, including myself. She was just the queen of the homestead. And I was one of the first homestead people in the space, the public online space, to get a milk cow. So her and I were pioneers in that. And I know when people watched me with Oakley and our journey with Oakley and all her babies in subsequent years, it inspired a lot of you to get cows, or a lot of you to get goats, or to look into raw milk. And so her passing was just this sense of transition and shifting. And it made me think a lot about just what homesteading, the place of homesteading in our life now, even though we still have milk cows and we still have some of her grandbabies that are set to calve any day now, that will continue. But it really felt like the end of an era. And I think that's something that perhaps, as homesteading is so trendy and so popular at this exact moment in time, that maybe a lot of folks haven't thought about yet. And it's expected that they wouldn't, because a lot of folks are still in that honeymoon stage. And I think it's important that we acknowledge this, because whether you're new or in the middle of your homesteading journey, or you're, you know, just starting or whatever, you're going to sense the shifts just like I have. Like, I've been doing this for 15 years now. So I've gone through the seasons, and I want you to be prepared for this will happen to you at some point. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but it will happen to you at some point. So I want you to have thought through this, even if you're just getting started. But there is certainly a honeymoon period with homesteading, right? Everything's new. Everything's exciting. It's really this intoxicating sense of bucking the system, making your own choices. It's fantastic. And I think that's why we're seeing such excitement across the culture right now, as more and more people get the chickens, start the sourdough. You know, it's almost become cliche now, which is funny. When I see their memes and the reels, it's like tongue in cheek. And I'm like, wow, not that long ago, this was still considered so unconventional and so off the beaten path. But now everyone I know has chickens. Like, it's not even a thing. No one blinks. Everyone's talking about raw milk. Everyone's worried about seed oils. So there's that excitement when it's fresh and new, and you get a ton of dopamine from, you know, trying what previously felt scary, whether that's sourdough or raw milk, and then you do it and you realize you can handle it and it's good and you like it, and it's the best feeling ever. And I'd say that honeymoon period can last a good long while in your homestead journey and in other journeys. When anything is new, it's fun and exciting. And then you're going to start shifting into more of that comfortable, been there, done that stage. I don't have a fancy term for it. But it's kind of that middle stage of homesteading where not everything is quite as new. You start to adopt some of these things as just normal, right? You've had the chickens for a while. You've had some pigs. Maybe you've had the cow or the goat. It doesn't feel as novel, but there's still pieces that you're expanding and depths that you're going to in your skills and your knowledge that still gives you that excitement. And it still keeps that curiosity and that interest fresh, right? And so I like that stage. And I was in that stage for a long while where we'd had, you know, the things were built, the infrastructure was there. I'd pretty much gotten all the farm animals I was going to get. I didn't need to keep going and buying new ones or new types. But I started to just expand deeper into each of those categories and ask myself, how can I garden better? How can I bake bread better? How can I compost better? And so many of those explorations for me became podcast episodes and blog posts and newsletters. And so that season is wonderful and lovely in its own right. And I didn't think there was a third season of homesteading. I kind of thought that second one was it. But I realized there is a third piece, and that's where I'm kind of entering now. And it's uncharted territory for me, and I think a lot of folks, although I see some other homestead friends entering it, maybe even if they don't realize it yet, it's there. And that's this idea where you still are homesteading. You still love the principles. You still believe in the pillars of what you're doing, why you're doing what you're doing. But you start to shift your intentions and your energy into other places. And for us, it really became more of a community thing, because when we were in that honeymoon period or in that comfortable middle stage, it was so self-focused for us, right? I was on the homestead 24/7. Christian was on the homestead. The kids were, we were homeschooling all the kids, and we were just home. And that's beautiful. It was a fantastic stage. But as our kids get a little older, and I've talked about this before, and I have felt more called to be involved in our community, I've realized that that's where I need to be. And so it's having a foot in both worlds for me, one foot on the homestead, still doing the things I believe in to the depths of my being, growing the food, being connected to the soil, knowing where my food comes from, but also trying to figure out how do I honor this calling I feel very strongly about, where I am called to be in our community, having face-to-face contact with humans instead of just screen-to-screen contact, and making a difference there. And so that's where I find myself at this point. And I see this happening to other folks too. I think this will potentially happen to you if you stick in this world long enough. And that's okay. And I want to give you some assurance today that if you're there, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think that it's something where we are losing our homestead passions. And it's okay if some of the things that you were doing previously, baking the bread, making the food, don't feel quite as exciting, right? Don't feel quite as earth-shattering or intoxicating because you've done them a million times. I think that that's also okay. And it's okay to let homesteading run in our in the background while we begin to invest our time and energies and focuses elsewhere. So that's what I've been ruminating a lot on lately. This idea that homesteading, and whatever you want to call it, if you don't want to call it homesteading, whatever, growing your own food, cooking from scratch, DIY, whatever you want to call this thing that you're doing, the reason that you listen to this podcast in the first place, that pull, that call, I've really been exploring it as a tool in our life rather than just an identity. And I think it's okay if it is an identity for a while. It was for me. I needed that. I've never fit in anywhere. I've never you know, been able to put myself in a box or label myself with other people my age or in my categories. And I didn't want to anyway. But for a while, especially as a young adult, I felt a little bit unmoored because of that. And homesteading gave a title and a purpose to my eclecticness and my weird collection of interests and the skills I was chasing. And I needed that identity for a while. And I think so many other people do too, right? And that's okay. But now I'm like, what if homesteading isn't my main identity? I don't need that as my title anymore. And now it's a tool. It went from, you know, homesteading above all else, homesteading is my primary focus, to now homesteading as a piece of the larger picture of who I am. And I think that's okay. And I think back, you know, historically, right? We know that food production, farming, was a huge part of our ancestors' lives. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, we know that it took a lion's share of their time and their energy. But I've asked this question on the podcast year before, was that out of necessity or out of choice? And I think for most of them, it was out of necessity because they had to eat and there was no other way to get food. And so now that we are in this modern era, with its good and its bad parts. I don't know if food production has to be our primary focus of our life at all times. I think it's important. I think it's beautiful. I think every single person should have a part in growing what they eat. I still hold all of that. But the question I've been asking myself is, what if I can still produce food for myself and my family, have my hands in the soil, be connected to the earth, but it doesn't have to be the thing that monopolizes my time and energy 12 hours a day. And so my question is, can I do that? Is that possible? What does that look like? Is that crazy? And that's where I'm at right now. Do I have the answers to all of that? No, I do not. But I have a few pieces and I want to share those with you just more of a, from a tactical angle here in a minute. But again, I just want to reassure you that if you're in the honeymoon stage, go for it. Dig in, enjoy it, ride the dopamine high. And if you're starting to shift away, I don't want you to feel guilty for that either. I want you to be able to honor the skills and the knowledge that you have built, that you've created. Keep those, keep what you want, keep what serves you, and then figure out what that next calling is and weave it in to the old-fashioned life that you've created thus far.
Hey friend, I'm interrupting this episode for just a second to tell you about something new that I recently discovered, and I think you might be interested. So here on the show, we talk a lot about ingredient swaps and how we can get back to the nutrients we're designed to consume without all of the industrial junk. And one of the ingredients that's super important that I think we often overlook is water. So obviously our bodies are made up primarily of water and we're supposed to consume a lot of water during the day. Whether or not we do that is a whole nother topic. And beyond that, water can greatly affect the outcomes of some of your old-fashioned from scratch foods. I'm namely thinking of things like sourdough or lacto-fermented veggies. So I was really excited to discover AquaTrue, which is a reverse osmosis countertop water purifying system, kind of a mouthful, but it's super cool because it filters out a ton of chemicals that are likely in your tap water that could not only be less than ideal for your body, but they may be messing up your homemade foods and you don't even realize it. This filter will take out the forever chemicals, think like PFAS, fluoride, chlorine, arsenic, nitrates, pesticides, and herbicides. And those last three are especially concerning if you live in an area with a lot of industrial farming because they'll get into the groundwater. And I think what I love most about it is it's a countertop purifier pitcher system. So you don't have to redo your plumbing. You don't have to hire someone to install it. You just take it out of the box and go. Honestly, my 11-year-old put it all together for me and it was super easy. So it filters out 15 times more contaminants than an ordinary pitcher. And I especially love the chlorine part because I wish I had a nickel for every time one of you have emailed me asking how to get the chlorine out of your water for your sourdough starter. So it can do that plus so much more. One filter lasts anywhere from 6 months up to 2 years. And if you have been buying bottled water, it will save you, the same as buying up to 4,500 bottles of water. So it's a really good deal. And if you head on over to aquatrue.com, that's AQUATRU.com, and use the code Homestead, you can save 20%. So head on over, check it out, and let's get back to the show.
I think the danger, if we don't honor shifts like this, is we can get into burnout really, really fast. And I have been there in the past where I have needed to put time and energy into other areas of my life that were calling to me, but I still felt the obligation, and generally that obligation was self-induced, generally from comparisons, right? I'm thinking, well, I'm a Homestead content creator. I have to do these certain things. I have to be able to create this content because that's what people expect. That's what my peers are doing. So I would put these rules on myself, so silly, of what I needed to grow and what I needed to make and what I needed to do, even though they weren't really speaking to me personally. And then when you combine all that into what you're actually trying to work on that's actually calling to you, that's where you start to get resentful. That's where you start to let things slip. You drop the balls and you dabble with burnout. And so I think being able to honor the seasons, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but I think that's really, really crucial as we are these modern people trying to figure out how to weave these old-fashioned skills into our life. So here are a few practical strategies that I am looking at right now. You know, it's spring. The homestead season here in Wyoming, if you want to call it that, is really getting ready to explode. We have green grass coming. I mean, hopefully it stays green because right now we have no moisture. But I have seedlings started in the basement. I'm looking at getting chickens. The cows are going to freshen. So that busy season of homesteading is about ready to kick off. And I am feeling, or initially I was feeling a little bit anxious about that because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm writing a cookbook. I'm really involved in the soda fountain right now. That's where I want to be. We're having a blast. We're having huge growth there. How am I going to do the garden? How am I going to milk the cow? What is this going to look like? And I started to feel that tension. And so I had to kind of sit down and go, okay, what parts am I keeping? What parts am I putting on the back burner? Maybe not forever. Maybe not. Maybe I'll come back into this world full-fledged, all in, whole hog. But I had to have this conversation. So here's what I ended up with for me. This probably won't be the same for you, but hopefully this thought process will be something that you can apply into your own life, even if you are still in the honeymoon stage. These are still good questions because I think we all have the tendency in this lifestyle to go a little bit crazy at first. And I'm not going to judge you for that because I like some crazy. I like some obsession. Obsession gets things done. Obsession changes the world. I am not anti-obsession. So go all in if you need to for a while. But I know that in every area of my homesteading journey, I've had to go kind of big and sloppy, and then I had to dial it into what works. And then I go big and sloppy again and do all the things, and I have to dial it into what works. So that's not a bad lesson to apply even in that honeymoon stage, if it fits. So the first thing I'm really thinking about this year is not abandoning things, but downsizing. So more is not always more. I'm trying to figure out how I can do less in ways that are more meaningful. So the big one for me with that is the garden. Traditionally, it's been more is more is more in the garden. And if I could plant any spot in our property, I was planting it. And that always felt good in the spring. And it felt real, real bad come August or September because, you know, you just school starts and you got other things going on. And then you're like, oh my goodness, I have to deal with all this stuff that I planted. And now I have to harvest it and I have to weed it and preserve it. So I chose this year to not do that, or I'm committing to not do that. Hopefully I will stick with that. I will stick with that. That is my commitment to myself. I'm going to stick with that. So I've chosen to not plant our big potato and onion strips this year. I have done that in the past kind of out of obligation. Again, like I need to do this. And then they take so long to weed, even with my landscape fabric. And I just wasn't monitoring them well. And so what I ended up having was a pretty poor yield. I put a ton of work in at the beginning, but then I didn't really get a good yield. And I'm like, this isn't working out. So if I'm going to do the big long strips of potatoes and onions, I need to have a better system or I need to have more bandwidth. Neither of which I'm going to be able to put into place by May of this year. So I'm choosing to not plant those. And yes, whenever I make a choice like that, I have a little bit of internal tension and fear of missing out and a little bit of that guilt, like, oh my gosh, I should be doing this. Other people are doing this. And you got to just ignore it, folks. You just got to like do what's right for you. So I will be planting potatoes, but not insane amounts of potatoes, which is probably fine. It will be fine. We will not starve through the winter. I'll still be planting my greenhouse and I'm still planting my raised bed garden. I'm going to be planting more strategically. So again, in the past, more was more. So it was cramming stuff in. If I didn't have a plan for a certain bed, I just would put random things in there just to fill it. And I'm going to be much more strategic. I'm growing less tomatoes. Like, let me rephrase that. Fewer tomato plants, but I'm going to manage them better because before it was a ton of tomato plants poorly managed, which I think probably my yield will be the same if I plant fewer plants, but stake them better, prune them better, trellis them, etc. On the vegetables that I always plant that we rarely eat, I'm looking at you, beets. I plant beets every year because I feel like I should plant beets. I don't know who's telling me I should. I just feel like that's the thing. I should plant beets. But when it comes time to preserve them, I never want to preserve them because my family doesn't really like them. So I'm like, I'm not going to plant the freaking beets this year. Just don't plant the beets, y'all. Just don't do it. Revelation, right? It's a revelation. So we're not doing that. I usually will plant a bunch of chard and an excessive amount of greens. Like, I go crazy on the arugula. I don't know why. Does anyone else do this? Like, I just plant so many rows of arugula. It goes to seed so quickly. And then I give it to the chickens, like, every freaking year. So I don't need to do that. I don't need to plant 16 rows of arugula, maybe one row of arugula, and that will be fine. So I'm just being strategic, and it might sound so silly to some of you. Maybe you guys already do this naturally, but I don't. And it's really easy to have your eyes be bigger than your garden space in the spring. We've been cooped up all winter. We're tired of being inside. We're ready to get outside. It feels good. Go, go, go. But your spring self and your fall self are two different selves. You have to remember that. So less is more in the garden this year. And I'm hoping that also equates to less maintenance throughout the summer, less weeding, et cetera, et cetera. I'm also applying this idea into our animals. And the coyotes helped me out a little bit with this with our chickens, because they got a lot of our chickens this winter, which, okay, judge me if you want, but it kind of needed to happen because there was a bunch of old ones and too many roosters. So I was like, well, nature, y'all, it's fine. So we have some of our chickens, but not a lot. So we're way downsized on chickens. More downsized than we've ever been, which initially I'm like, oh my gosh, bad, bad, bad. I need to go get 50 more chicks. And I'm like, wait, do I need 50 chicks right now? Possibly not. Because when I had 50 hens, I was wasting eggs, giving eggs away. I mean, I like a lot of eggs. A glut of eggs is fantastic. I don't need quite that many eggs. I was actually losing money because I'm not going to sell. I know with how my life is, selling eggs is just not something I want to do. Coordinating pickup and money exchange. I just don't want to do that. So I would give them away, or we would give them to the pigs. And it just, like, it wasn't a good use of time or resources. So we're going to get more chicks. I'm going to be strategic. I'm going to get fewer hens. I want more eggs than I need, but I don't need a ton of more eggs than I need. I don't need to go crazy. And so we're going to be doing that this year. We are reorganizing our chicken situation. So it's less about just like crazy quantities of chickens that are everywhere and kind of sloppy and messy, and there's no systems. And we're just going to downsize it to where it's manageable and easier to take care of. I also think this will be better for the kids because they're in charge of a lot of the chores. And sometimes I think with our chaos of animals or our lack of systems, it was harder for them to do a good job on chores. And it was harder for us to hold them accountable. So we're going to go fewer chickens, but better manage chickens. When it comes to our other animals, we're going to finally be getting rid of the goat herd. We have six of those Nigerian dwarfs. We haven't been milking them in a while, but I've kept them around because I don't know why not. But they just get into everything and they tear open feed sacks. And they just don't need to be here. So I'm like, why are we keeping this excess of chaos when we don't need to? So we're going to be getting rid of those, giving those goats to a good home where they're not wreaking havoc around our property. So it's just this idea of downsizing, which doesn't mean you're quitting, right? It doesn't mean you're stopping. It just means getting more intentional with what you're doing. And my hunch is, honestly, I think we'll probably produce the same amount of food that we have been, but with less mental turmoil in the process, because there's just been that level of chaos, which makes things feel more complicated. And I know it doesn't equate to yield or food grown. The other big piece of this is simplifying and systematizing. And we've talked about this before, and we already kind of had this in place, but I'm really leaning on it now. We are being really strategic with automated watering, right? So we have floats on our big stock tank. We put in automated waters a couple of years ago. So making sure those are up and running, so we're not having to fill buckets for every single pin every single day. That's huge, which that allows us to keep things rolling in the background and put our energy towards things that are more meaningful versus just those chores. Again, that may not be in the budget for you right now. That may not be something you can set up right now, but it's something to consider. And I've talked about this. I've had whole episodes on this, but in the garden, if I were to hand water my plants, I wouldn't have a garden. There's no way I could do that with my schedule right now. There's no way. So having timers on the hoses or timers on the sprinklers, you know, Christian's pretty handy at setting up the overhead fancy automated watering systems. If you aren't able to do that, just get one of those timers you screw onto your faucet and let that time your sprinklers or time your drip hoses or whatever. That way there's one less thing you're having to worry about when you're juggling all of the balls. So again, little tweaks here and there, but that is what is allowing us to keep that homestead the pieces that are important to us running in the background while doing other things. And I think the last piece of this, so we had just like downsizing, but not abandoning, creating the systems and simplifying where possible. But the other big piece of this for me is not guilting myself for shifting. And it's easy to do, right? We get into the comparison trap, but just acknowledging that it's okay to evolve and it's okay to shift and it's okay to let new things light you up. And I think honestly, if the same things and the same skills that got me excited 15 years ago were the exact same skills that are getting me excited now, I would have to say that maybe I hadn't really learned them yet. You know, I feel like we should be progressing and we should be evolving. That's not to say that baking bread still doesn't give me satisfaction. It does. I have a loaf of 100% whole wheat sourdough bread in the oven right now, and I'm really excited about it because it's turning out really good and my starter's really happy right now. I'm getting joy from that. But that's a different level than the bread baking that gave me joy 15 years ago. And I think we need, in fact, I know we need to give ourselves permission to shift and grow. And it's also giving ourselves permission that to accept that homesteading will always be a part of us, even if it looks different, even if it doesn't look like everyone on Instagram, even if you're not in your garden wearing your prairie dresses with your baskets every day. In fact, I never do that, so that's never been a thing. But it doesn't have to look like someone on Instagram where they're homesteading full-time or they're staying at home full-time in order for it to count, right? Keep the pieces that are lighting you up. Keep the pieces that are making you feel connected to yourself and your family and the earth and your community. And then let go of the ones that don't serve you anymore. And it sounds elementary. It sounds obvious, but sometimes we can really get stuck on that. I know I can for sure. Especially when we get into that comparison trap. So remember, my friends, as we shift into this season of spring and summer and all the homesteading things, wherever you are in your journey, whether it's the honeymoon stage, the middle stage, or you're starting to look into other passions and skills that light you up, homesteading is a mindset. It is a tool, but it doesn't have to be our whole identity all the time. It can be. If you need that, that's all right, but it doesn't have to be. So I hope that as you progress into your homesteading life, whatever that looks like for you, that you can find that happy medium. I know for us, it feels good. And I don't even feel as inclined to call myself a homesteader anymore. Somebody the other day, I was in Utah at a horse clinic, and somebody was asking me what I do, which is always a really hard question to answer. Because I'm like, well, I write books and I do these some stuff online, which anytime you try to explain what I do online, it just is really complicated. And then I'm like, you know, I have a restaurant, but that's not really our bread and butter, but I do things. And they're like, oh, are you a homesteader? I'm like, yeah, but yes and no. Like, I used to just own that. And now I'm like, I am, but I'm also other things, right? And so I think there's some freedom in that too. So that's my rambling for today. I hope that made sense. That's where we're at. You might start to see me show up a little differently online. Like, I've been sending a newsletter every Wednesday for years and years and years. I think I might change that cadence a little bit. Sometimes I feel like, well, consistency, number one, is good, right? Consistency in business is good. And I believe that. And I've taught that and I've coached people into that. I also think that sometimes, I know for myself, I can get into this rut where I'm producing content just for the sake of being consistent. And it doesn't always feel as useful as I want it to feel. So I may cut down the intervals of my newsletter and just start sending things when they're really resonating with me. Because what I found, and this is a note for any business owners listening, when something resonates with me, it also resonates with you, the audience. And when something feels a little bit stagnant or stale to me, it doesn't really hit with the audience either. So don't be surprised if you don't see a newsletter. I'm fine. All is well. But I'm just going to start sending when it really feels useful and really is lighting me up. We're just going to try that. The podcast will be coming back once I get the cookbook buttoned up a little bit more. If you're in the area, definitely come see us at the Soda Fountain. We are doing big things there. Our supper nights are selling out. We're experimenting with all kinds of food, making some incredible connections with the community. That's just something I'm absolutely in love with at this moment. And I'm riding that wave, right? We tried to sell the Soda Fountain last year. You guys know that story, or if you don't, you can listen back a couple episodes, a couple seasons ago. And The answer was no, you're not going to sell it. You're going to dig in deeper. And so that has caused a part of the shift. It's part of the impetus for this episode is, you know, what does it look like when we shift? What does it look like when we're called into something like a restaurant, like this community involvement? How do we balance those things? How do we hold two ideas at once? So if you're in Southeast Wyoming, come stop by the soda fountain. And that's what I got for you today, friends. I hope that was helpful. A little rambly, but there we are. So thanks for listening. My bread timer, by the way, I'm gonna have to go get it out of the oven. Hopefully it's okay. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. And we will catch up on the next episode of the Old Fashioned on Purpose podcast.